This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum. And today we have a couple people, Jerry Braun with Integrated Resources Network, who's going to start out a discussion about what's happening over in Europe as far as renewable energy laws and what they mean for citizens and energy communities. So, Jerry, why don't you go ahead and start a conversation, and I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
Okay, well, thank you, Sierra. By way of introduction, last year I spent a year with the help of a 20-person advisory committee looking into the question of how local governments and energy utilities can work together. There are a whole bunch of things that are in their purview, including local renewable energy. And that doesn't mean that they have to do anything about it. They are, the local governments and the utilities are monopolies, so they do what they want to do. But the question was, how could they collaborate? And one of the sessions we had with the advisors was focused on what's going on around the world. We didn't get, I thought we didn't get quite enough on that, and so I did a little research recently to try to uncover what was going on in terms of collaboration around the world on local renewables. And one of the things that really impressed me was that the European Union in 2018 passed something called their clean energy package, and apparently it was a revision of what had previously been in place, entitled the Renewable Energy Directive. And what the revisions do is that they give citizens and energy communities across the EU guarantees that they can invest in renewables, and basically, these rights, if you will, are now enshrined in EU law. And so the thrust is toward promoting people-powered renewables, and obviously to achieve a 100% renewables future overall. What it means, the new law means in practice, well, first of all, it acknowledges that citizens and communities are stakeholders in the energy system, which, maybe goes without saying, but in more detail, that's the why, but the how, four things. One is that it recognizes that over 40% of Europeans live in apartment blocks. And so acting together to install renewable energy, it may be the best thing they can do to benefit from renewable energy. And then in terms of how, they are now able to form what the law refers to as renewable energy communities, which means that people, local authorities, and small and medium-sized enterprises can set up a legal entity in order to collaborate in the production of renewable energy. And it also, there's also an option for companies to obviously install renewable energy systems on homes. Thirdly, there is, as we have in parts of the U.S., a role for aggregators, that is a market participant that can pool smaller independent producers together and help optimize the use of their installations and basically help them determine when the right time is to consume, sell, or store renewable energy they're generating. And then finally, the scheme allows consumers to actually trade renewable energy among themselves, which absolutely is not possible in the United States without even with a middleman. So this results in higher payments and quicker payback periods for the investments in local renewables. So I think the key thing is the rights, and basically the Renewable Energy Directive lists several specific rights that are enforceable to ensure that citizens are protected in terms of their investment in renewables. And basically, it's not just the EU that guarantees the rights, but basically everybody involved in local governments and private market participants have to guarantee these rights as well. And one is obviously the right to produce, store, consume, and sell renewable energy. That is a right in some states in the United States to the extent that net metering is in place as a law, but there are some states that don't have net energy metering in the United States. There is another right to be that says you have a right not to be unfairly charged for the energy that you produced yourself. There's a right to access energy markets either directly or through a third party. And there's protection against changes that could either penalize involvement in renewables or try to persuade people not to invest in renewables. And obviously there are generally protection of consumer rights and the right to, access remuneration for engaging in renewables production. So to me, this is very, very much aligned with our interest in, or my interest in, and the advisory committee's interest in what can be done at the state level in the United States. It's really hard to imagine at this moment the United States having such a law or anything like it. But it's not hard to imagine state by state for this kind of a set of rights and basically structuring of the local renewables market. So I'm interested in the conversation today just in terms of which states would be most likely to be interested in this, this template, the European template. Is it actually just crazy to think about doing it in the United States? Those are the kind of questions I have. So I'll stop there and look for a conversation.
All right. So everybody, the other Jerry, we have two Jerrys going on right now. Jerry Damron, you just joined the call. Jerry, are you there?
Yes, here. Hello, everyone.
Hi. And you just missed Jerry Braun's introduction. Jerry Braun, would you want to just briefly, quickly go over what you just said and then see if we can get a response back on that? I know you just said the whole presentation. Can you summarize? And then so Jerry Damron can catch up on it. He's probably, 6 o'clock over there or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it's 6 a.m. Sorry to join the call late.
Yeah. Jerry Braun, can you summarize just a minute here? I think it'd be worthwhile.
Sure. Glad to have another Jerry on the call. what I was talking about, Jerry, was something that I came across trying to do some research on what's going on around the world in terms of local renewable integration. And there's a law, actually a revision of a law in Europe that really changes the game for local renewable production. It basically, number one, acknowledges that citizens and communities have a right to do certain things in terms of their own investment in renewable energy. It and it recognizes that a lot of people, you know, are live in apartments and so forth, and really have to join together if they're going to do anything. And it so it provides a bunch of ground rules basically, and you know, including you know, a set of rights, as I said, that basically apply across the European Union, the right particularly to produce, store, consume, and sell renewable energy as a citizen or as a renewable energy community, a co-op, or what have you. And fundamentally, it is now up to the European countries in the European Union to put in place, you know, the details, if you will, in their case, in their situation. And that's what's expected. So I was asking the question, maybe you came in on this, you know, is there any chance that this could happen at the state level in the United States? And or would it be even crazy to think that it could? You know, it's a step beyond what we have in terms of some states having net energy metering and that sort of thing. And I would say also that it's connected to the European Union's vision that says that by 2050 they want to get to 100% renewables, but they expect that almost half of that will be generated locally through, you know, arrangements that are made possible by this law. In other words, there will be a mix of electricity supply in particular that is not all coming down into the local jurisdiction, but a lot of the locally consumed electricity, in fact, I think the target is 45%. It would be produced within the community. So that's kind of a summary of what I was bringing up.
Well, Jerry, that's great. I think that what's happening in the European Union can provide a lot of guidance for us in the United States. And I really believe you're onto it when you talk about the state policy or state mandates in conjunction with locally developed distributed energy resources. So I really appreciate the thrust of your research, because my group, the Go Green Institute out here in Maui, did very similar research to find out what local municipalities around the world have been taking advantage of the amazing economic advantages that are coming to the fore with locally developed renewable energy. And we have found with our little research group that this is an exciting economic opportunity as well as an exciting environmental opportunity. And I would love to share with you at some point the research. We found five local principalities around the world, and there's many more, but we found and highlighted five in our guidebook called Sustainability Solutions. Five different communities have gone to or towards 100%. And the first one, Danso, Denmark, is an island of about 12,000 citizens. And over 10 years, they went to 100% renewable with solar, biomass, and three wind farms. And now the citizens are really benefiting because the citizens invested in the last wind farm. They're all making money while their entire island community is 100% renewably powered. Burlington, Vermont, which has a municipal utility, also went to 100%, and their citizens over 20 years are pocketing about $42 million in positive cash flow for their city by having gone to 100% renewable power. El Hierro, an island in the Canary Islands in Spain, is now at 60% and would like to go to 100%, and they're using wind power and pumped hydro energy storage. Yolo County, a small rural county in Northern California, developed their own 7-megawatt solar farm. Now, their load was only 5.2 megawatts. So when they switched on their 7-megawatt solar farm, which was built on an empty county lot, which cost them nothing, and they brought in SunPower, who did the whole project for them and financed it for them, so it was $0 out of pocket for them, on the day they turned that system on, their $1.3 million recurring annual bill to PG&E went to zero, and they started generating $700,000 to $1 million a year in additional revenue. That's $2.3 million per year in savings and earnings. That's $46 million over 20 years that Yolo County is pocketing.
No, absolutely, I want to have you finish, but I wanted you to know that Jerry Braun actually is from Yolo County and is one of the people who have actually developed that whole project. So it'll be interesting to see what Jerry's take on it is.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, please go ahead and we'll come back.
Well, Jerry, congratulations for what you guys did there. In my research, I met Terry Vernon, and after about 4 or 5 phone calls with Terry, we conspired. Terry and his girlfriend flew over to Big Island, and I went from my home in Maui over to Big Island. I spent 4 days with Terry and got to know him quite well and learned quite a bit about your project. So congratulations on what you guys accomplished. And we hold up Yolo County, Jerry, as an exemplary example for other counties to recognize that they can develop their own project, they can do it with $0 capital and create phenomenal economic benefits for their county general fund and their citizens. And as Terry said, every county in America should do this.
Yeah,
okay.
I'd like to hear more about
your experience with that with Yolo County.
One second here. Jerry Dameron, why don't you go ahead with the other cities that you were going to talk about? I think there was at least one more, maybe two more, and then we can circle back.
There's two comments, Sierra, that I think might be helpful on the discussion. The first one would be to finish by saying that the fifth municipality that we highlighted and showcased in our guidebook, showing 5 municipalities who have gone to or are on their way to 100% renewables and making millions of dollars for their citizens. The last one would be Kauai Island. And they also have a municipal utility named KIUC, Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. And I've met with them 5 or 6 times. Great people, really dedicated to a sustainable future for their island. They're way ahead of us. I was at the conference, 2012, where the utility director and the mayor shook hands on stage and signed the agreement that the island and the utility were going to 100% renewable. So those are the 5. There's many more that we can learn from, And Jerry Braun, I'm looking forward to hearing your comments specifically on what you guys did there in Yolo, because it's such a great project and such a great example. I really want to learn more. But the last thing I'd like to contribute is that back in 2013, my lawyer and I approached the Hawaii legislature with a proposal for a draft legislation to send Hawaii as a state to be mandated by law to 100% renewable. And my attorney, Eric Pham, wrote that bill on my request, and we brought two other wonderful fellows along. Four of us, as four Hawaii citizens, took the proposal to a guy named Mike Gabbert. Mike Gabbert is 20 years now a leading senator in the Hawaii legislature. You might know his daughter, Tulsi Gabbert, who's running for president. We approached Mike, and we also approached Chris Lee, who was the head of the Environmental Committee in the House. Mike was head of the Environmental Committee in the Senate. We went and did a simple one-hour presentation to Mike and to Chris, showed them our draft bill, and said, guys, we all understand that the embedded economic financial relationships between the utilities and the fossil fuel industry for 100 years, those relationships are so tight. That's not going to happen. The shift to 100% renewable is not going to happen on a business basis. We needed to get legislation passed. Both Mike and Chris agreed. They took on our draft bill. They promoted it like champs. It took us 3 years, 2013, 2014, and on June 8th, I got flown over to Oahu from Maui. June 8th, 2015, our Governor Ige signed into law that Hawaii was to become the first state in the United States to be mandated by law to go to 100% renewable energy. And we wrote the law for 2035, and it got pushed back to 2045 once the minions of the fossil fuel industry realized we were going to prevail. But we now have the first state with an overarching law which mandates the utilities to go to 100%. So we're very proud of that achievement. But where it's going to be implemented around the world, we believe, is on the local level, where local citizens and local government can control the process, and where the local government can benefit and control the economics of the transaction for the benefit of the local citizens and for the benefit of the local government. So we're also very proud that Jerry Brown, governor of California, signed a very similar copycat bill 2 years later in California. So what we started in Hawaii had influence on the fifth biggest economy in the world, California. So we're very pleased that that happened as well. So with that said, with state laws maybe slower to be forthcoming than we've seen in the EU, but I would love to hear your insights, Jerry, as to what is happening in the EU that could be beneficial to help us push state mandates.
Well, thank you, Jerry. That, especially, I mean, this is a small world, isn't it? Yolo County and Hawaii. I will just say make one comment on the Yolo County initiative, and Terry deserves all the credit. In fact, when I talked with him about it, 2-3 years ago, I found out about what he had done. It certainly seemed, and it seemed since then, that he almost was able to accomplish what he did by doing a huge amount of a very good, technical and development work himself.
Yes.
And somewhat, I hate to say this, but somewhat under the radar of county government. And what, you know, what I think is true is that the county probably still hasn't discovered the pearl of great price that it has in that regard. But the other comment I wanted to make, and I just want to pick up on you know, what you've learned in Maui, I think is a general, very important and little known truth about you know, local renewable energy, especially solar PV, and that is that it. just taking California at this point, what I tell people is that. If you do the arithmetic, your solar electricity that you have on site is coming in at about half the cost of the grid electricity that you would be purchasing over the next couple decades. This is something that people don't know. And especially local government officials and even state government officials. It takes a little teasing out to really come to that conclusion. And I mean, probably it's important to say that that's true in California because we have high electricity prices. But what is, you know, so it's not such a, you know, kind of a slam dunk conclusion in other states where grid electricity prices are lower. However, the arrows are going in the right direction. Solar is getting cheaper, especially where you have the local, a mature local retail infrastructure. And that can happen, but that only happens when there's market growth. But it's also true that for a lot of reasons, grid electricity prices are not only not coming down, but they're going to be escalating at 5% a year or so. And so whereas California and Hawaii may be in a great position to exploit this, you know, actual really big cost advantage that local solar has, other states will have that opportunity as well over time. And so somehow we need to get the word out on that. I think that's probably the most important thing because it's been a long time where, you know, the argument has been environmental. And that only appeals to a certain cross-section. The economic argument appeals to everybody. And I think you were right, Jerry, to really emphasize that because that's what I think we need to emphasize in the future. Let's not worry about what our politics are. Let's understand that we all have an economic interest.
Well, Jerry, that's great. That's precisely the central theme of our group and what we're calling lucrative sustainability.
And
you're so correct, Jerry, when you say that people have to somewhat develop the early stages of these projects under the radar because the embedded relationships are so intensely intertwined and solidified that there's great resistance, and we're fond of saying, but we haven't figured out the magic combination yet, because we're saying that, hey, with these lucrative sustainability projects where the community has, and we've collected 30 super projects from around the world. We looked at over 200 projects. And I told my team, you know, this is only going to take 3 to 6 months, and we're going to publish this book and we're going to sell it to people, and these cities are going to buy these books because it's going to be so much money in it. It took us 2 years. We studied over 200 projects, and from our studies, we came up with 30 super projects that all make phenomenal money. But oddly enough, even though we thought that we found the Holy Grail where, okay, liberal environmentalists on the city council and the fiscal conservatives on the county council or city council are finally going to be in harmony and so excited to do projects together which satisfy both of their objectives. I mean, you know, the round numbers are 20% of the mayors in the United States get climate change and understand that we are in serious challenge that must be quickly and scalably solved. And, you know, 80% maybe, who knows what the actual numbers are, but perhaps 80% of the mayors are going, well, you know, environmental issues, you know, might be a factor, but we have a city to run here. We got to make money. So that's why I was really excited when Sierra told me that you were going to be talking about what's happening in the EU, where I believe they're ahead of us. Every bit of information we can gather to understand what's going to help wake these local municipalities up, what's going to help them go through the learning process, what's going to help them understand the economic and environmental positive impacts, and how they need to move on this right away in order to take advantage of the opportunities, we still haven't figured it out. We want to figure it out because we believe that with 3,002 counties in the United States, we could forge a lucrative sustainability revolution that could transform America in 5, 6, 8, 9 years, and that's what we need to do. We've got to make this transition happen quickly. So that's what I want to learn from you, Jerry, is, you know, any insights you have as to what helped Mindy Nunez at Yolo County sign those documents. And I'd like to tell you a little quick anecdote, which is useful because it just makes you scratch your head. Terry Vernon, like you said, Jerry, worked his heart out, found several different empty lots, developed several different performers, looked at different, you know, stationary and tracking, and he really did a lot of work to show the economic value. The day that Mindy Nunez and Terry were to meet to sign the agreement to move forward on a $0 down project, that's going to put over $60 million net positive cash flow into the county over 30-some years. There were two other directors in the office screaming, yelling at Mindy Nunez, telling her she could not sign that document. The project was going to be a disaster. It was never going to work. It couldn't work, etc. And she and Terry were listening to these guys yelling at them that they couldn't sign the agreement. And she ended up having to say, well, guys, thank you very much. I really appreciate your passion on this. And let Terry and I meet and finish this up. And thanks a lot. They left the room. And Terry Vernon says that Mindy Nunez says, I don't know what their problem is, but this works on every level. And I'm signing this, but I don't know what their resistance is. Jerry, do you have any insights on why other managers in Yolo County were frantically against this project?
Not exactly. I will say this, that one of the things we've done recently is to create a more or less countywide community choice joint powers agency. And one of the hard realities is for that agency is that We have almost extremes politically in the county, in power centers, if you will. We are an agricultural county. We are also home to a major research university, and you can imagine that the politics are different in those two different parts of the county. So
yes.
I could only infer that there are folks who know very little about energy, but they do know what their political party thinks, and sometimes that's all they know. Going back to the one point that you made, that I think the question that needs to be asked of local governments, kind of the threshold question, is do you care about your local economy? And you know, going back to your little story, what I heard was that you do have a tremendous focus politically and from a governance point of view on just making revenues and costs match up. And there's always a threat to going in the wrong direction. So that's economy internal to the local government. But there's also the question of the local economy and what do local renewables mean to the local economy. That doesn't get a lot of political attention or any political attention that I can tell. But it's going to be very, very important longer term because of climate change. Climate change is not a good thing for local economies.
although the response to climate change can be a completely new green economy engine.
Well, that's exactly where I was going. And I've actually done some arithmetic on just, local solar deployment. We're up to about 10% of our electricity is generated on site in our county from solar. And what that does to the local economy or for the local economy, the net economic impact is equivalent to about a permanent 20% reduction in electricity rates. And we will
never see
a 20% reduction in electricity rates. We're going to see a 5% per year increase in electricity rates. So this can really offset what's coming at us. But it's something that's an educational process. It's something that we need to find a way to get the word out. I actually went and sat down with one of our county supervisors to kind of say, give him this information and so forth. And I'm not sure one conversation was enough. It's the kind of thing that, it's kind of like people need to hear things seven times before they are ready to make a decision. I think we've got a lot of work to do to really just help people understand what's at stake from the point of view of the local economy.
Let me say one thing here, guys. A couple things, actually. For one thing, this is something that I have been wanting to do for a long time, is to bring this information to the surface as far as the economic value of renewable energy to cities and counties across the country. I can do this through the webinars and get a lot of this information out. And what I've been thinking about is a course of some sort where we have a program starting from scratch. How do you even get people interested in hearing about this? What are the arguments for that? And then moving that forward into the different steps that they can take, the economic value case studies, which is what's been missing so far, Jerry Dameron, to show people what other cities and counties have done. And what you're talking about is key to getting people to take a serious look at this if you can show that counties have actually made millions of dollars on this. Now, the other thing is we have some other people in this group. I'd like to open it up to a discussion to a few others. And David Kay, I see that you're in there. Is there any chance that you have anything to say on this? I would guess that you might. You're...
Sure. I mean, I think it's fascinating, and I also would like to – I actually missed the beginning, so I'm not totally sure who's talking other than Jerry Brown.
Okay, let me explain that. We have Jerry Brown is on here from Yolo County, and Jerry's Integrated Resources Network. And then Jerry Damron is a new member of the group, and he's out in Hawaii right now, and he's done a lot of work and research on Go Green Cities, and that's his organization, and actually showing how cities can actually benefit and counties benefit economically from some of these projects. So that's basically who's in the group right now. So, David, if you have anything to add to this, go ahead and
contribute. Thank you very much for that. So, firstly, you know, kind of kudos to everybody who's to the Jerrys for the progress they're making and for highlighting case studies, because I should say I'm an academic primarily, although I'm kind of a practitioner and local official on the not elected but appointed. I work a lot with planners and I work a lot with local governments around New York State. And I do research on primarily at the moment that's relevant to this on the community acceptability of utility scale solar. But I'm interested in the whole energy picture. That's just what I happen to be working on now. So importance of case studies. You know, as I think most people know that, you know, there tend to be people who are in municipalities just like everywhere else who are early adopters and people who kind of hang back and wait and see how it goes for someone else before they learn. So I think the idea of having success stories and also lessons to be learned that aren't as successful out there for other folks in other municipalities is really important, and having networks to spread that learning around is very important. Books, whatever else, you know, every which way. I think that one of the Jerrys just said, you know, the idea that some people have to hear the same thing 7 times, sometimes it's 25 times from different directions. I think probably the most in some of the work I do, the most important thing about it, and this relates a little bit to the polarization in Yolo County that was alluded to, but I would say much more general. The information has to come from a trusted source. Otherwise, it's going to be dismissed. So learning who the decision makers actually trust with this kind of information is really important. And using your networks to access people through those networks is really incredibly important in this kind of thing. And then the last thing, so all of that I would say is like super positive, my reaction to this dialogue. I think there's enormous room for progress. I think the fact, as one of you was saying, that by the way, I'm trained as an economist, the fact that there are economic benefits that are becoming more and more real to more and more municipalities is a message that has the potential to cross political boundaries, you know, and get the conservative Republicans and liberal Democrats together. So the only kind of like other side of the coin that is something that we're working on here in New York is it's really in the context of this discussion, I put it back to what's the definition of local? So, like, when I look at Burlington's example of what local means, I think, wow, you know, they're getting most of their renewable energy from pretty local sources in their 100% renewable portfolio. It's mostly wood. They have some special circumstances with their location, which enable them to do that. They're also importing from other places. And one of the things that we're working, renewables from Maine, renewables from Hydro-Canada, so one of the things that we're particularly concerned about in New York, for example, is the fact that the big demand centers are urban, The locations of many of the renewable facilities are in rural places, and there's an upstate downstate dynamic, and there's increasing kind of resentment and pushback about that in some of the rural places that see, for example, that our state banned natural gas in some of their communities, which they saw as their best, brightest hope for economic development, and now is pushing renewables really hard, which, of course, I'm in favor of, and maybe they are, but there's some resentment building. So I think that kind of rural-urban tension, which is also related to higher-level politics in, Democratic, Republican politics, is something to be concerned about, and I did hear some reference to that kind of thing in Yolo County as well. So that's all I'll say.
David, could you comment more on what the resentment is about in the rural areas?
Well, I mean, I don't know if anybody's familiar with some work that's influenced me a lot is in this area, and remember, I'm an academic here more than a practitioner, but there's an idea that a guy named Dan Kahan at Yale University, who has a background in law and sort of behavioral decision, he calls it cultural cognition. So it's really about who is it that is in charge of decision making, who's in control, and some of it is, I framed it as what's really local, in the sense that it's probably even a bigger consideration around transmission lines, which of course if you have only distributed generation you don't need as much of, but around transmission lines, like what's the benefit to the local people of that? Around the siting of large scale solar, which is what I look at mostly, it's really around the fact that in our state we had a law passed about 7-8 years ago which took authority away from local governments for any facility 25 megawatts or greater, which may be large in some of your contexts, maybe small in many other contexts, but it gives it to a state siting board rather than a local siting board. So again, there is local representation on that board. There have been no facilities that have yet been permitted, but there's a lot of anxiety in the sites where these things are being mostly located, which is not really near the demand centers. It tends to be in the rural northern and western parts of the state. And the anxiety that's there is about, they're going to ramrod it down our throats, whether or not we want it or not in our communities, and what benefit is it going to be for us? There's no decisions that have been made about that, so this is not based on empirical, we know how this board is going to make decisions. It's based on concerns and a history of tensions between rural and urban. And also, a history of obvious cooperation. I mean, all urban places get their food primarily from rural parts of the country. They get their electricity.
Right.
They get their water. But there's a history here that, and what I'm concerned about, because the context I'll put this in is, and this is maybe paranoia, but I worked a lot on the fracking issue here in New York State, and this goes back to the cultural cognition issue. So I saw, starting in 2006, if you'd said the word natural gas in New York State and many other parts, there would have been, most people didn't care that much. If they had a concern about it, or if they had an attitude about it, would have been mostly positive, kind of clean energy, cleaner than coal. Most people didn't know much or care about it. But certainly if you had an opinion, it wasn't really related to your politics or your sense of who you were. Like 2 years later, I could tell you whether you were in favor of or opposed to fracking by how you spelled the word. And it correlated very highly with rural-urban status and very highly with political affiliation. Hmm. So I'm concerned that that shows signs, very preliminary, but I'm concerned that that same kind of response could happen here around renewables because the state is pushing it so hard. That's just a concern, you know, and as an educator, my goal is to try and figure out ways to prevent that from happening as much as possible.
One thing, David, this is Jerry Braun. I think that the renewable advocates, and I include myself in that group, need to be for something. And I'm seeing too much of them, you know, people want to, you know, people are upset and really anxious about climate. And it's really, I think it's really important that we not be ganging up on things that we want to kill rather than just doing our work to promote what we think is good. We're not going to get anywhere doing the former anyway. It just makes people angry and actually gets in our own way when we're trying to convince them to support what we think is good. So I just think it's a you know, that's kind of something that has worked for the renewables community in the past. There was a national organization, or still is, the ACOR, and their basic guiding philosophy was that we're going to be for something. We're not going to be against a bunch of other things. And I think we need to get back to that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jerry.
I would agree. I would just add that...
One second here. Laurie, I think you were trying to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, Jerry, just to your point about, you know, not ganging up on things that we want to kill, I'm just curious, you said several times, you know, made the statement that grid electricity prices are going to be escalating at 5% a year. What, you know, I just don't believe that for a minute. So I'm just wondering what your basis of that is. And the reason I ask and the reason I express concern is because it's those kinds of statements, from my perspective, that sometimes, you know, they're just, if, you know, the idea that, you know, energy prices only rise, you know, is across the board just not historically supported. So I'm just wondering your basis for your statement.
Great question, and I really appreciate it. Two things. Number one, they have been escalating 5% per year in California. And I think California is going in a direction that other states will go in regarding renewables. Point two, though, there is a when you look at 100% renewables and try and think about doing it the way that it is being currently thought about, which is utility-scale renewable projects and a huge investment in transmission and distribution to allow that to work, including investment in energy storage, you can imagine getting to about 60-plus percent renewables on that route. Going beyond that, is going to be even more expensive. And so I'm looking at it from a purely, I'm an energy guy. I know how the system works. I know what renewables cost. I know what's been happening. The costs have been shifting from, used to be 30-70 generation versus, rather 30-70 transmission and distribution, 70% generation. It's now almost the reverse. The costs are going up on the transmission and distribution side. They're coming down on the generation side, but not enough to offset the increases on transmission and distribution. I hope that helps.
It does, but let me make a recommendation, perhaps. When you say that in the context of supporting renewables, you know, the implication, and particularly, you know, we're all energy guys, so... It, you know, we hear things differently than somebody who's, you know, just wants lights to come on when they flip the switch. But when you say that, it, in the context of supporting renewable energy, it implies to me, even as an energy guy, that that is unrelated to renewables. And if, you know, if the main driver is the fact that, you know, if we have utility-scale renewables, everything that you just described, then I think you have to be very careful about making that statement. You know, if a large part of that is, you know, the T&D that's required to support getting to 100% renewables, I think you just need to be very careful the context and maybe, I don't know, maybe state it somewhere other way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's hard. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's really general statements like that are really for small groups.
Unfortunately, they're often made in large groups. I hear it over and over and over, and it's just, you know, I think it turns a lot of people off. Anyway, we don't have to continue the discussion, but.
I do appreciate that. It's. I think maybe I should take my own advice. I think the. I'm not saying that. That grid electricity is bad. I'm saying that the prices are going up, and renewable prices are going down. It can go down anyway when you get to scale in a particular locality. But anyway, thank you for the comment. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay, we're going to – I have a couple things to say about this. Next year, I'd like to start putting together a series of webinars that are related to these topics, starting out with how do you convince people in a city or town to even want to integrate renewable energy in the first place, which is, as we've discussed, extremely complex. And I think one of the issues is peer pressure, which I think, David, you brought that up, and that's one thing I have learned, that peer pressure is one of the stronger drivers. Lancaster, California is interesting. It's a Republican mayor who's going gangbusters on renewables. So I'd like to get that information into some of these webinars as well, what they're doing and how they've benefited economically from that, and other particularly Republican-type cities across the country who might have moved in that direction. And talking about the steps necessary, where do people start, who do they talk to, what are the arguments they can use, and again, like I think somebody mentioned, maybe it was Jerry Braun, it takes several different times of people hearing the same information before they'll make any changes. But what I've learned is getting to that right person in a city can drive all these changes in a city, and getting to that right person who then can get to other people in the city who are decision makers and get their attention. Is it can make a difference. And I'd like this forum to be more, or not more, about moving forward, as we have been in the past, but more systematically, solutions and teaching people specifically what they can do to actually achieve some of these goals. So with that in mind, I'm going to be thinking about it. If you have any comments on that, please send me an email. And I'll think about I have done this before, as a matter of fact, a number of years ago when I first started out with these webinars, and I had a series of these types of webinars, and it was very effective. So anyhow, that's my thoughts. Any thoughts or comments briefly before we go on that?
I appreciate, Sierra. This is Jerry Dameron. I appreciate, Sierra, your intention to follow through on that and help us to start understanding and articulating the barriers in a more explicit way so that we're prepared to handle those. And what I'm excited about is perhaps we can amass two lists. One list is, to whom do we go and what are the factors that motivate and stimulate the positive change, and a list of everything that works. And to Lori's point, what are the factors that turn people off, that ramp up their anxiety, that make them fearful of change? What I found is in speaking with about 20 municipalities over the last 3 to 4 months, many of them don't believe it. Even that you show them the pictures, you play them a video, and they go, this just does not compute. And so to have a compelling list of what motivates them, encourages them, and then a list of where their anxiety gets stimulated so we can come up with an art and science of helping people move through their resistance and their blocks, it's going to be very important to work on both sides of the equation. Because what Jerry Braun said is, I mean, I just did my 11th meeting with the County of Maui yesterday, and it was 11 meetings until one of the county council people said, I'm going to set up a meeting with the mayor. Because the infrastructure, the political infrastructure is so strong, in alliance with the local utility, in alliance with the fossil fuel industry, that it really is difficult.
Jerry, we're going to have to end the call, but we have you on the call next month as well. So I'll get some other folks on that call, and we'll explore this idea. But please send me your thoughts in the meantime here, and I'll put something together as an outline for discussion. And I would like to do these as webinars. They'll also be thinking about who to contact and how to get a hold of them.
That's great.
So, anyhow,
can I make one last comment?
Yeah.
To this whole
sure.
discussion, I think one of the
yeah,
issues
please.
Is the focus on local/distributed renewables versus utility scale, because I think one
yes.
of the points of confusion, and Jerry, why I asked the question, you know, we all say, you know, costs are coming down on renewables, renewables are less than coal, you know, going to be less than natural gas, and yet we say grid prices are escalating. So I think, you know, making that distinction very clearly may help clarify the point.
I was thinking the same thing. Good point. Really good point.
I don't see the solution as being either local or utility. I think it has to be both. So this would be part of the discussion on both areas. You know, we've got municipal utilities, we have investor utilities, and they both have to come along on this whole topic and the economic value to both of them. But what we learned in Colorado was what we learned in Colorado was that you can't put pressure on the investor utilities because Xcel Energy is at least promising to move forward on renewable energy at a large scale. And this is all the way from Boulder up to Minneapolis. And it's because of the pressure that Boulder put, partly because of the municipalization that we're doing right now, and the threat of other cities in this area municipalizing, and then also when Minneapolis with John Farrell up there, they changed and they moved forward because they didn't want to lose their customer base. So I think there's another consideration to be made on a larger scale as far as not just one city or town or county, but at large scale with the investor-owned utilities. Anyhow, go ahead, Laurie.
No, I agree. You know, my point is just in talking about, you know, cost escalations, et cetera, we need to be very careful whether we're talking about distributed/local or utility scale and put everything in the context. But I agree with you that both are important.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, guys. Man, we could talk about this a long time, but let's think about it for next month's conference call and next year. I'd like to start seriously moving forward on some kind of a systematic approach to this whole thing, because I get emails out to about 3,700 people right now. A lot of them are cities, and a lot of these cities do come to the webinars. So, and you can help contribute to that list if you have your own mailing list. You can send out the invitations to them. Anyhow, okay. Talk to you later.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Jerome.
All right. Thank
Thanks.
You now.
Bye-bye.
All right, now.
Thanks.
Yep, bye.